Happy Black Indigenous Americans Day. My name is Asha and I am Andrea's assistant. Today, I am going to share a post from the Path of a Greenwich Substack with you. You can read the full post on Substack and the link is in the show notes. Primary source, proof of our existence in Massachusetts before the 1600s. Parlexia. November 25th, 2025. Why we begin here. The 1600s to 1800s. New England Crucible, and Why It Matters on Thanksgiving. The story I am telling did not begin in 1620 with the arrival of the Mayflower, and it certainly did not end in 1676 with the brutal conclusion of King Philip's War. But if you want to understand the complete architecture of American racial erasure, read on. I am going to detail how the erasure of Black Indians was conceived of and meticulously designed. The erasure of Black Indians from the Massachusetts Bay Colony was rigorously tested and ultimately perfected in that dynamic environment. I'm going to explain that environment and why I refer to it as dynamic. The colonization of Massachusetts has been glamorized and is now celebrated as a peaceful union of cultures. There is no setting more critical than Puritan New England between the first permanent settlements and the dawning of the 19th century. This work is going to highlight the lies and prove that Black Indians were a significant group of Algonquin speakers in Massachusetts in the 1600s when Europeans arrived. Black Indians were some of the first people the Pilgrims encountered in the 1600s. The period of time that we are focusing on is from the arrival of the Pilgrims to the final legal disappearance of the coherent Indian category, which comprised a significant percentage of Black Indians as well as Asiatic Indians. Black Indians especially were erased from Massachusetts census rolls. We have written records from between the 1760s and the 1790s that serve as a crucial and often overlooked laboratory. We can study these records and see the erasure of Black Indians in Massachusetts. Initially, Black people who identified as Indian because they spoke the languages and had been in the Americas for thousands of years were rightly listed as Indians on the public records. They had the distinct legal, cultural, and political identities of indigenous peoples. These were the Wampanoag, Narragansett, Pequot, and Nipmuc people who were later systematically undermined. The Black Indians were redefined as mulatto or Negro, which ultimately dissolved them into a nascent, racialized caste system that was forming in early America. This is how Black Indians were relabeled as African Americans and enslaved on their own lands or sent to other parts of the Americas as Negro slaves when they were, in fact, Black Indians who, according to the laws of the colonizers, never should have been enslaved. This crucible of colonial New England was the birthplace of policies and practices that would define American race relations for centuries after. It was there in the early Massachusetts Bay Colony that land dispossession and Christian conversion were weaponized as tools of assimilation and control. White Europeans used their bastardized religion as a weapon against Indians in Massachusetts. The devastation of King Philip's War, 1675 to 1676, accelerated this process of colonization. The war led to the enslavement and transportation of thousands of indigenous survivors. This included many people who were described by white Europeans as looking like they were from Africa. The indigenous people of Massachusetts were slaughtered, and the survivors were trafficked to the Caribbean as slaves. Their lands were stolen, and their political structures were dismantled. After a few generations, they didn't even have their language to prove who they were. Crucially, as the population of enslaved and free Africans grew in the Massachusetts Bay Colony, the legal and social boundaries between people of African descent and surviving Black Indigenous communities began to blur. This is why I described the place as dynamic. Things were constantly changing demographically. Then, weird laws were introduced by land-hungry white Europeans, and those laws incrementally stripped both Black Indians and African Americans of rights. Their identities were often conflated in colonial records through terms like Negro Indian. Sometimes they simply folded Indians into the broader derogatory category of people of color, which included Black Indians and African Americans. This calculated legal disappearance of Black Indians in Massachusetts was not a biological event. The people were still there, but a socio-political act of erasure removed them from the record. This act of erasing Black Indians from the record was designed to free up the remaining ancestral lands of the Black Indians and solidify a white settler colonial society in Massachusetts. Understanding this 17th and 18th century New England laboratory is essential because it reveals that the modern American concept of race is a direct engineered product of colonial era legal and bureaucratic violence. Black and indigenous identities are often viewed as mutually exclusive even today. I'm sure there are many people reading this or listening to my podcast in disbelief. I will try to answer all of your questions in the coming weeks. There is so much to share. The Thanksgiving narrative is a blatant myth. They want us to believe there was cooperation, but look at the flag for Massachusetts. Do you see that strong arm over their whitewashed depiction of a Massachusetts Indian? It's telling. The myth of the friendly first Thanksgiving marks the beginning of the very process by which the original Black Indian inhabitants of Massachusetts were legally and culturally disappeared from the national consciousness and from their native lands. And this erasure of the native Black Indians of Massachusetts paved the way for the later exclusion of Black Americans of indigenous ancestry from tribal recognition and land claims. The year 1675 marks a pivotal and devastating turning point in the history of the North American mainland. 1675 was the year when three catastrophic events occurred. These three events converged with brutal clarity and forever altered the legal and social landscape of race and land ownership in Massachusetts and the rest of the budding country. The simultaneous birth of a legal fiction. In the late 1600s, in the newly formed Massachusetts Bay Colony, this was the first time that a dark-skinned, Algonquian-speaking indigenous population was observed, documented, and consistently described by multiple European eyewitnesses. They used terms that would later become racialized epithets. The Black natives of Massachusetts were labeled tawny, swarthy, almost black, or black as any gypsy. This visual description is essential, as it precedes and informs the subsequent legal maneuver. They were describing the Black Indians with disdain from the start. In perfect, brutal synchronization with this documentation that the native population was black, the white Europeans began doing three things. One, near annihilation. That Black Indian population was subjected to an unparalleled campaign of violence known as King Philip's War, 1675 to 1676. This short, brutal conflict resulted in a high casualty rate for Black indigenous people. The Wampanoag, Narragansett, and others were killed at rates that were proportionally higher than anything witnessed in the American Civil War or World War II. The white Europeans' goal was both subjugation and extermination of the Black Indian population from the entire Massachusetts Bay Colony. White European colonizers wanted to clear vast territories of the stolen land they called the Massachusetts Bay Colony. They wanted to eliminate the original inhabitants, who were the Black Indians and the Asiatic Indians. Two, the legal erasure and reclassification. The survivors of this genocide on Black Indians and their immediate descendants were then subjected to a calculated legal maneuver. While Black Indian people were still fluent in their ancestral languages like Massachusetts, Wampanoag, and Narragansett, they were still systematically and deliberately reclassified in legal records as Negro, Mulatto, or Colored. This change was revolutionary because it erased their identity on paper. 3. Land theft. Crucially, this new racial designation had nothing to do with demonstrable African ancestry and everything to do with extinguishing Black indigenous people's land claims. By legally transforming Indian people into black people, colonizing liars could simultaneously claim the original population of black Indians was extinct and appropriate their land. The blueprint of dispossession. This genocide and rewriting of history in early New England was the birthplace of a legal and political trick. It was a blueprint for dispossession. Follow these steps and you can turn black Indians into African slaves and steal their land. This recipe would later be copied and enforced across the entire continent of North America. The logic of this genocide and land theft was simple and devastatingly effective. 1. Declare Indians extinct. Official records are manipulated to declare the original land-owning people extinct. This included a huge number of black Indians who were native to Massachusetts and the surrounding areas. 2. Seize land and subjugate people. The actual survivors of the genocide are either sold into slavery, often to the Caribbean, or forcibly relocated and marginalized. The people who weren't sold to the Caribbean were often forced off of their ancestral homeland. 3. Reclassify the children as African. Their children and subsequent generations are officially reclassified under new racial labels such as Negro or Black, a term that, in the colonial legal mind, automatically implied African descent and therefore lacked a legal claim to the ancestral lands of the Black indigenous people from Massachusetts. 4. Benefit from manufactured absence. Authorities can then point to the absence of legally recognized Indians as irrefutable proof that the land was always empty and ripe for settlement under the principle of terra nullius, which means a land belonging to no one. King Philip's War and its immediate aftermath in New England was the very first instance where this sophisticated mechanism of racial and legal erasure was drawn in blood and ink, establishing a precedent that would be refined and reapplied throughout the expansion of the United States. The collapse of a national myth. It is for these foundational reasons that we must begin the investigation into the history of Black American Indians in New England. This region is not unique in experiencing this form of erasure, but it is the critical nexus where the paper trail of legal records, colonial correspondence, and eyewitness accounts is the thickest. The quotes detailing the physical appearance of the original inhabitants are the most explicit. The foundational American Thanksgiving myth is the most fragile and easily exposed lie. If the historical record proves that the original inhabitants of Plymouth Plantation were, in fact, Black indigenous Americans who were systematically legislated into the category of Negroes before the United States itself was formed, the entire national origin story collapses. The romanticized fairy tale spoon-fed to the public every November is replaced by a stark history of genocide, legal deceit, and racial engineering designed to steal land, revealing that the very foundation of the nation rests upon a deliberate act of historical and racial erasure bigger than we were taught. They knew from the start that there were Black Indians in the Americas. Their colonizer mindset led them to slaughter and traffic the Black Indians, then relabel them as Africans and pretend the land was empty and just waiting for them to move in. The history of Black American Indians is a truth that has been obscured by intentional misrepresentation. Evil colonizers knowingly erased Black Indians from the record to steal our land. This is a sprawling narrative that demands attention across multiple continents and many centuries. I intend to share as much as I can, so please subscribe if you want to learn more. In later episodes of this historical investigation of the history of Black Indians in the Americas, I will swing the camera south and west to the areas outside of the Massachusetts Bay Colony that were colonized by other white Europeans before the 1600s. The documentation is rich, but it is dispersed across the records of various European groups. The Spanish, 1500s, the earliest Spanish chronicles, written by explorers and missionaries spanning from the coasts of Florida all the way down to the Andes in Peru, repeatedly describe entire nations of the Americas not as red or copper-colored, but as negros y oscuros de color, black and very dark in color. These accounts were written decades before the transatlantic slave trade became a major enterprise in the Americas. Therefore, these records confirm the presence of dark-skinned indigenous populations who were sovereign nations in the Americas long before the arrival of Europeans. The French 1600s to 1700s, the French records from vast territories in Louisiana and the Great Lakes echo the observation of black Indians. Official French documents, private journals, and military dispatches refer to powerful nations in the Americas like the Natchez, the Tunica, and the Fox. These indigenous groups were described as negres, black people. The natives were also described as plus noir que les Africains, darker than the Africans. This critical distinction suggests the French understood they were encountering a people distinct from the West Africans they later enslaved. They knew the black Indians in the Americas were not African, but they were visibly black to the European eye. The Portuguese, 1500s to 1600s. In Brazil, the Portuguese documented millions of native inhabitants as Negro da Terra, black people of the land. Crucially, these records were compiled and circulated long before the arrival of the Great Guinea slave ships. This timing confirms the existence of a massive indigenous population that the Portuguese classified as black based on their complexion. This classification fundamentally challenges the modern racialized understanding that equates black with African descent only. But these earlier multilingual records are scattered across three competing groups of Europeans and four different languages. The records are in Spanish, French, Portuguese, and various indigenous languages that were filtered through European scribes. New England, by contrast, offers a concise, concentrated, and overwhelming body of evidence. It gives us one colony, one pivotal war, King Philip's War, one critical generation, and a mountain of consistently themed English language documentation, court documents detailing land sales and punishments, ship manifests listing black Indians fleeing servitude, census tables where native families are labeled Negro, and Puritan sermons railing against the black heathen on the frontier. All of these sources, without exception, tell the same story in plain 17th century English. I chose to start with the place where the lie of a friendly, racially pure founding of our country is celebrated every fourth Thursday of November. I started in Massachusetts because that is where I'm from. I was born in Boston. Massachusetts is the place where the historical evidence is abundant. The sheer volume, clarity, and consistency of the record make it undeniable. Please subscribe because I have so much more to share. In my next post, I am going to share quotes from primary sources so you can read the words yourself. Thank you for joining me on this journey of enlightenment. Andrea Brooks, Path of a Green Witch podcast. Thank you so much for listening to this special holiday episode of Path of a Green Witch podcast. I hope you found this informative. You can read the full episode in writing on the Path of a Green Witch Substack. The link is in the show notes.
Since 2011, American Giant has been making everyday clothing with extraordinary effort. Not in far-off factories, but right here in the USA. We obsess over fabrics, fit, and details. Because if you're going to wear it every day, it should feel great and last for years. From the cut of a hoodie to the finishing of a seam, nothing is overlooked. Our supply chain is tight-knit and local, which means less crisscrossing the country and more care in every step. The result is durable clothing, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and denim that become part of your life season after season. This isn't fast fashion, it's clothing made with purpose, by people who care as much about how it's made as how it fits. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.